Welcome to The Mist, a show about mysterious stuff and me demystifying it. My goal is to find things that are hard to know, like drugs, cults, and cultures, and get to know them and tell you about them. To demystify things that seem
almost too good to be true. People, you know, claiming that their cancer was cured from it. It's not just a physical cure, that it's a somato-emotional cure. Not for a couple years did I actually find a group that was actively holding ceremonies for this.
And what was that group?
It was the Santo Daime Church.
Today, we're talking about a church called Santo Daime. And a drug called Santo Daime. It's very similar to ayahuasca, actually. So if you want more background on ayahuasca, go back to episode 2. For this episode, we're talking about them interchangeably, the brews of Santo Daime and ayahuasca. In and out of the Santo Daime Church, people believe this drug can improve the health of your mind and your body, and have a will of its own. And to some, that drink is an extension of Christ and a way to access God.
My name's Sean Gardner, and who am I, is the perennial question. I run a company, I sell Chinese herbs, and I formulate. Originally, I'm from Monterey Bay, a small town called Marina.
So Sean was a young student back in Monterey Bay, in junior high, and he was assigned a book report that would eventually lead him to the Santo Daime Church, what some consider a cult. Okay, now hold on. About the word cult. It's in the show's cover art, and I mention it in the intros, but I have to stress some stuff about this word. It's loaded. And I picked it for the show because, I mean, I'm not gonna put new fringe and alternative religious groups on the cover art and in every intro. Cults is an easy way to say all of those things, but very often it comes with negative connotations based on public perceptions of the most violent or the most offensive groups. So part of what I'm doing here is trying to find the truth among all of these perceptions, personal truths. Sean has his own experience with the Santo Daime Church and with the Santo Daime drug. And someone else may have found the Santo Daime enlightening or healing. And a third person may find the very idea of Santo Daime repulsive. And I think I'd find this at the Catholic Church down the street from my house, too. And honestly, most churches. So when you hear someone's story on this show, which has of course been edited by me, and I do really try to be fair in my editing, my hope is that we all better understand the group and the person telling the story, and to try to be as objective as possible, to understand what they do and why they do it. And not just to assume inherently that a group is good or bad just because it's a new or small religion. People do good things, and people do bad things, everywhere. And in cult-like groups, there are often so few people that the bad stuff is the loudest. Let's just see what people do for the sake of personal belief, and not just to assume that cult equals evil. Okay, I'm just going to put this soapbox over here. Back to Sean in junior high. He's working on a book report.
Yeah, we had been assigned to pick a category or substance, and this is all under the pretense of apparently attempting to educate us with the Just Say No campaign. For whatever reason, I just decided to do hallucinogenics and psychotropic substances, LSD and psilocybin mushrooms and peyote. The point of the book report, as we were told, was to demonstrate the negative side effects so as to essentially scare our peer group into not wanting to ever try these things.
Sean says the report had the opposite effect. It piqued his interest in psychedelic experiences instead of squashing it. And a couple years later, he got the chance to try one of those drugs he reported on.
I just seized upon the moment. It was one of those things like, oh my God, I can finally experience this. And it wasn't, unfortunately, a situation where I could just receive it and go somewhere else. It was like, you take this right here, right now.
What was it?
LSD. I want to say it was about 15 and a half or so. We were at a classic car show called Cherry's Jubilee in downtown Monterey. It was fascinating to see the visual aspects of the drug affect my appreciation for these classic cars, which were, you know, just brilliant colors already. When you're staring at this complex machine, your brain starts to go wild. I started to have this overwhelming sense of appreciation for how somebody could essentially dedicate a large chunk of their life towards something that they so deeply care about. And that was essentially my first taste of visceral understanding of the concept of, you know, we are all connected, we are interrelated, and we are dependent upon one another for our survival.
Eventually, Sean moved to Southern California, and he kept his interest in psychedelics and entheogens, further defying the ulterior motive of the book report. And at 30 years old, Sean had been researching ayahuasca for a while, but he didn't go to Peru or Colombia like a lot of people do to get that ayahuasca experience.
I had always been doing some level of research around this, and the constant experience reports that I would read on Arrowid.org is just profound. When people are continually saying that their healing, their mental, emotional, psychic, even physical healing is being catalyzed by this. At that time, I was very much interested in just healing in general, as I'd been recovering from a few years ago having a car accident, and that it's not just a physical cure, that it's a somato-emotional cure. It's something about resolving inner emotions. So I really sought that out, and I started reaching out, and not for a couple years did I actually find a group that was actively holding ceremonies for this. It was the Santo Daime Church.
Sean found a way to apply to the church online, just through an internet forum. He started the conversation that led to the vetting process, and his girlfriend did it with him.
He actually just asked me about my overall health. He also asked me, you know, why am I interested in this? What do I think that I'm going to get out of this? What would I like to get out of this? I told him I don't really know. I would like to, you know, maybe experience some form of enlightenment. It's like, okay, well, it's generally best to not expect anything so that you can come in with a clean slate and allow the mother, as they refer to the brew or the ayahuasca, to do her work with you and to not really taint the experience with your own ego. I did the best that I could with that. It's a little difficult sometimes to not bring in your emotional baggage into just any given situation.
Eventually, Sean and his girlfriend got the okay from the member who was vetting them. Some sources say the Santo Daime's official protocol is for any new attendee to have a male sponsor in the church. And while the person who vetted Sean and his girlfriend was a man, Sean didn't notice, at least, that being an issue.
We both had a vetting process to basically see if we're psychologically stable, to make sure that we're going to stay the whole night. We ask that you don't go anywhere. You know, you shouldn't be going out by yourself while you're still undergoing this process and under the influence of this. They had rented out space at a local center, kind of tucked away back in the foothills of Soquel. They respectfully request a donation, which I was happy to have. You know, the first time I was kind of broke, so I told them that, and they're like, we request a $100 donation. I was like, I don't really have $100. I've got more like, you know, 20 or 30. And like, that's fine. We're not going to turn anybody away. I was a little hesitant coming into this situation in particular because of my already established skepticism and to a certain degree even spite for religious ceremony. I was very trepidatious to come into something like this and, you know, wonder if they are cultish in any capacity, which it was not exactly a cult-like experience initially.
Sean and his girlfriend were open, but skeptical, as they drove to the Santa Cruz foothills together and arrived at a scene that didn't quite match what he expected.
It was like Sunday brunch after church. Everybody was just conversing and relaxed, you know, just kind of taking a walk around the property. There's an experience called the La Purga, the purge, where you throw up. I'm not a big fan of throwing up, so I was actually fasting for the previous day and just drinking some juice and water. So everybody was eating a little bit, to my surprise, actually a fair amount, when we rolled up, and they were relaxed, just kind of meandering around just like you would at any other gathering. It wasn't anything weird at all, but that's what kind of weirded me out about it. Like, this is such an intense experience. How is everybody so calm right now? I expected everybody to be very serious and like, okay, this is the way it needs to work, very structured. And that threw me off a little bit. As far as the Santo Daime Church goes, it is actually relatively structured once we got in there. They explained that men would sit on one side and women on the other, and since we were essentially the newcomers or neophytes and not introduced into their adept circle, we would be sitting on the outside of a couple of concentric circles. And in the center, there is an altar with a double cross and rosaries, and they had crystals and flowers and other beautiful things as essentially like a center of worship and focus for the session.
Sean said in the center of the room was one man leading the hymns. He was singing and playing guitar, and he had a support cast of two women and one man, the man who originally vetted Sean and his girlfriend.
And then you have the inner circle around them. And these are apparently the people who have been with the church they've been doing this for 15, 20 years. And that was very interesting to me to realize that it had been underground this whole time. That inner circle, I guess you would call them the nuns and the priests, if we're using like a Catholic analogy.
There are guardians of the ceremony in Santo Daime. And in addition to taking the ayahuasca themselves, the guardians supervise others and care for them if they need anything. And they also maintain order for the ceremony.
And they are also distinguished by what they wear. And they have certain types of ceremonies where they change their suits as well. Women are encouraged to wear dresses, either white or blue. And men are wearing white shirts with white slacks, and you're encouraged to wear whatever white you can if you're just a newcomer, as any kind of uniformed situation would do. You end up focusing less on how people look and more on your own self, your own inner work. And I did find that actually quite helpful. We had been coached a little bit as to what to expect. We're going to have three rounds of drinking the brew throughout the night. For the most part, they asked us to follow the instructions. And he did, prior to all this, say, sometimes people actually don't experience anything their first time. And he's like, we don't really know why that is, but we think it might be that your system is still adapting to being able to use the medicine. And one of the side effects, obviously vomiting and purging, also you end up going to the bathroom pretty profoundly. That was some of the pre-guidance that we had.
Then it was time for the first round, the first time each person in ceremony drinks the brew. Jonathan Goldman, who's a Santo Daime leader in Oregon, says everyone present in ceremony must drink. No looky-loos or casual observers.
Get up in a line and you basically tell them how you're feeling. And sometimes they'll just simply look at you and kind of size you up, if it's your first time, they'll give you what they consider to be an appropriate amount. They invite you to say, what level of experience would you want? 1 to 10. Went up there and I said, the first round, I think I asked him for a 7. And he says, like, if you like to say a blessing over it or prayer or some words of intention, now's the time. And I did so, and I drank it back, and the people before me, I was watching them, and their faces were writhing in, taste bud agony. And I get up there, and I was like, oh, no, this is actually kind of sweet and woody and, like, earthy, and not bad at all. It almost reminded me of licorice and anise and, not in a bad way, but, like, dirt and bark. And I was totally fine with it. I was like, shoot, I wonder if I can get back in line and get another drink. That's kind of tasty. It was such a small amount. It was, maybe 2 ounces worth. I'm going, I was expecting to have to drink a whole bottle full in order to get the effects. But very shortly, I would realize, you don't need a whole lot. During that 20 minutes, we started to sing some hymnals, which in the Santo Daime Church, at least in this case, are all sung in Portuguese, which, of course, I can't speak. And that slowly started to transform into a harmonizing. I started to actually notice the harmonics of everybody singing together and that kind of third tone, if you will, being generated above all of us. That it's a very interesting, beautiful sound. And it became more and more amplified. The room started to become a little bit more sharp and clear. The colors started to accentuate more deeply. And I noticed I felt lighter. And it wasn't anything profound, but I was like, oh, maybe I'm just really feeling the music, you know? Maybe I'm just really getting into, you know, the feeling. And, you know, this seems like a good group. And then they get us up and they start showing us this little kind of side-to-side shuffle dance. And you're basically like dancing into like a box form back and forth. You know, I had to ask somebody at some point, like, why are we doing this? He's like, it's to move your energy so you don't become stagnant. So when stuff kind of comes up, it usually comes in waves and you don't really want to constrict your body while you're doing that. So we're just going to facilitate it along. Started doing that. I was like, okay, this is kind of annoying, actually. I really just want to sit here and kind of enjoy this like elative feeling that I'm having. Eventually, I got it, where through the next cycle, I would find out emotions would start coming up, sadness and grief. And I'm like, oh God, I can't sit and stew in this. I really do need to get up and move. Which they allow you to go and use the restroom. If you need to lay down, you can lay down and that sort of thing. But that this process is very important for the experience, at least how they engage in it. And then they'll start the next cycle, usually after about an hour or so. And this whole experience, by the way, can last between 6 and 8 hours of constant singing, chanting, dancing, meditation, and so forth. I eventually started to realize that everything that we were doing was actually part of a much larger ritual, which they didn't particularly explain to me, maybe because, you know, they thought it wasn't relevant or it was not for novices to really know or understand. Oftentimes people will experience fatigue and weakness, and if you're heavily crying or grieving, they might come over and speak with you. But generally at no point are you being consoled in the same way as you would normally think of when you see somebody crying. You'd want to come up and give them a hug and tell them that it's okay.
So Sean didn't get much consoling or context for what he was going through. And really, to the Santo Daime, that's not a job for people. That's a job for the drink, for the drug. And like he said, there were 3 rounds of drinks over the course of the night. Only some went back for a fourth. Sean stuck with 3.
By that time, I was just toast. It's exhausting to be doing this. It's like going and seeing a therapist and just expressing all your grievances for hours on end and kind of having it structured. So it's like, now that you've brought all this stuff up, sit quietly, close your eyes and breathe and relax into it and experience the anger or the pain or the hatred or the suffering or the grief that you're experiencing right now. Sit with that. Find out where it came from. That takes an energetic and emotional toll on you. I had this energy moving in me, this plant substance moving in me, compulsing me to continually work on these issues. It wouldn't let me go to sleep, even though I'm like almost begging it to just, all I need is a short nap. Like, give me 30 minutes. And it's like, no, you came here for a purpose, a reason. You stay up late all the time. You're gonna go to sleep now? No, sorry, buddy. You don't really have that option right now. And this was nothing that the people in the church were doing. This was my internal experience. There was several times that I wished I could have just been hugged, but it was one of those experiences of like, no, time to grow up. and be a man about your emotions and be real with them instead of packing them away. That this process of unpacking is essentially what I believe the primary function of ayahuasca is. It brings you into contact with a more real, genuine, and clear vision of yourself and version of yourself, the original version, not these copies that we've created for all the other situations and conditions and people in our lives where we have to put on another face. But the visionary nature of ayahuasca is directly applicable to your life. I have yet to meet somebody who has had an experience where it was just absurdist and they couldn't make any sense of it. Sometimes you certainly may lose yourself in this process and might feel like you're out of your body, but generally at no time was I ever fully disconnected from the ability to have a conversation like the one we're having now. I wouldn't really want to, but I could, and I actually did. There was one woman there who was, she had cancer. She was pretty much laying in the corner, and there was somebody sitting with her. She was quite old. I thought it was beautiful that she was able to have this experience before she died. I asked myself this constantly throughout the night. How do I really want to live my life in a way that I will have no regrets and I will have created as much beauty and love as I can while I'm here? And I had never really thought about that, really ever, but to feel it and to embody it, that wasn't something I was really expecting at that time, because I hadn't really experienced that with other psychedelics. Never really a deep, profound, what people would call like a heart-opening experience.
And did you feel you achieved that in this experience?
Well, achieve is a strong word. I would say that my eyes were opened to the possibility that this is work. It's not going to do it for you, and it's merely opening a door. You still have to walk through it to use the cop and idea from the Matrix, right? You still have to do the work. You still have to go through the door yourself. You still have to resolve this. No one is going to do this for you. There are ways of making it a little bit more simple. And this is a very simple and direct path, I believe. It's not necessarily for everybody. Although I will admit, at that time, during my third round, I did have the thought, we may not have such strife and conflict in the world if we see more people drinking this. And this leads back into, from what I understand, part of the belief system of the Santo Daime Church. And I kind of felt it, which is that they actually believe that the concoction, the brew, is the second coming of Christ.
Okay, just a quick step back. I'm going to nerd out for a little bit because this is super fascinating. The Santo Daime Church, in a lot of ways, is a Christian-based faith or a Catholic-based faith. It's a blend of a lot of different things. Most prominently, though, is Catholicism, African hoodoo, shamanism, and a belief that plants can have intention and can have souls. The group's founder was a Brazilian man named Raimundo Irinau Serra, who often goes by Master Irinau by the followers of the church. And the role of Christ in the church can vary a lot from source to source, actually, which is common for a lot of religions. There's overlap and there's variation depending on where you go, what you read, and who you talk to. And in fact, the Santo Daime Church right now is split into two branches. Some writings say that Sarah, the leader of the church, was an embodiment of Christ himself and encountered the Virgin Mary, and that the brew they drink, the Santo Daime, is a means to access God, which, as a living entity inside, that plant that was brewed and cooked and scraped and made into the Santo Daime drink that they are consuming, that makes that plant and the drink itself an extension of Christ.
They did not really have an overt goal described to me of what their purpose is, other than to really just bring this to the world. There was little in the way of espoused religious doctrine. They only really opened up about the details when I asked.
What did you ask?
What is it that I'm really experiencing? Who is it that I'm talking with when I'm having these conversations? Because this, again, is one of the most common experiences that I did have, which is having an intelligent conversation with another actual entity in your own mind. And it's as if I'm talking with you right now. I would ask questions to which I didn't believe I held any answers to. And this other entity in this state would answer them for me. I believe that they believe that maybe this other voice is Christ. So that's what really tripped me up, that they believe that this brew, this plant combo is the second coming of Christ. I believe we ended with a meditation, drank, danced, said hymnals, and had a meditation to end. So we had actually gone, I believe, almost a full 12 hours. I was done. You know, I remember laying down and sleeping for probably about 3 hours and drove back. And the drive home was actually almost completely silent. To be completely honest, we were blown away, quite tired. So I just turned some calm music on. And every once in a while, you know, we'd sit there and go, "Wow, that was amazing, right?" Yeah, that was amazing.
Sean did go back, but this time, the daime left a different taste in his mouth, and he saw something that upset him. You saw an interaction between two people that didn't quite sit right.
It's getting very hot because they close off all the doors. They don't want, you know, huge gusts of wind or anything coming through, and they don't want to leak out all this heat. And so one of the first timers to this group gets up and opens the door. One of the inner circle elder types kind of snaps his head around and yells at the kid. He's like, "Close that door right now." He turns back around. His body goes into this tetany-like state, where tetany's a condition where typically your hands and your feet and sometimes your spine will kind of seize up a little bit. And he does this, and he kind of arches back in his chair, and he starts shaking. But they had slowly helped him come back out of the state, laid him down. At first, I thought he was having a seizure or a heart attack or something, because he had, like, clutched his chest, and I'm, like, sitting there wide-eyed, like, what the heck is going on here?
Sean never found out what exactly happened to the man who seized up that day. And while it could have been a number of things that made the man react as he did, that interaction, that moment, it made a difference in how Sean saw the church.
That was where I started to see that there was not a completely clean channel, if you will, with all of these people who were engaging in this work.
What do you mean by that?
That there was maybe some ulterior motives with how the structure of this group needs to work. Somebody stepping out of line so quickly and getting just dramatically slapped down and put back into line. That's the kind of activity you tend to see within totalitarian situations or dictatorships or even, you know, on a much more smaller level, cults.
Now remember, this was one instance at one ceremony. Sean said he didn't feel this reflected the entire church, but even if he did say that, for this show, I would want more corroboration. It may or may not be part of a trend. But I have to say, I haven't found anything indicating that the Santo Daime Church is very strict with its members. There aren't loads of former members condemning the church, as is common with a lot of high-control cult-like groups or religious organizations. I can't find anything like that for the Santo Daime Church, frankly. And in fact, it's quite difficult to join the Santo Daime in the first place. They don't recruit new members.
If it was a one-off, it was a very harsh one-off. And I can't imagine anybody wanting to come back and be in that state and experience someone so dramatically clamping down.
Can you tell me about the end of your relationship with the church? Like, can you go back if you wanted to?
Probably. I didn't frequent their circle enough for them, I think, to remember me. I probably could. I have no desire to do so. My last experience left me with a sense of completion and that a suspicion that there might be a level of cultism being developed within maybe just this one group, but possibly the church as a whole. As, you know, most churches do have that. It's just they're acceptable cults.
The way Sean's getting at the word cult right there, he's sort of drawing lines around the term and defining it in a few ways. Cults, as he notes, are often just new religions. They haven't been around for a long time. They haven't had the years and sometimes centuries to embed itself into a culture, so it's not normal to a lot of people. Cults, as he notes, are just new religions. But there's also a common assumption that cult equals control. And that's not necessarily the case. This is a show about demystifying, finding truth about the uncommon, not about assumptions, not about the common societal norms that we all sort of see and experience. We're here to find things that are hard to find. So I asked Sean, what about the Santo Daime makes him feel that culty feeling percolate in the back of his brain? What are the aspects of control that he saw, that he witnessed?
The uniforms, the segregation of people in these concentric circles. When you create a circle of separation that we all of a sudden maybe have secret knowledge, or because we dress this way, we only have access to this level of enlightenment. You know, bollocks, give me a break. That's something I overtly reject. There's nothing that you can know that I cannot, and vice versa. And the implication can be there, I believe, with any religious movement. And you see that with Christianity. You can only know God through Jesus, and only through accepting him, you know, into your heart can you enter into the kingdom of heaven. That's the only way. And this is why I say there's cultish attitudes towards us and them. The inherent nature that I experienced of this brew, there is no us and them. We are intricately connected. And so there is a conflict there, I see, with maybe an attempt to mold the way in which you have an experience with this through a religious lens. While I'm not saying that it is a cult, it has certain warning signs to me that it has the potential to do so if somebody would be so compulsed. That is the counterbalance to what I'm saying about it, you know, being, you know, possibly a cult or something, that there really are genuinely loving, caring people who really do want to see this spread far and wide, and that they do believe genuinely that this can heal humanity's pain.
This is Sean's story about his experience with the drug ayahuasca and the Santo Daime Church. Sean's and my intention is not to publicize our ideas of what the Santo Daime Church is to influence anyone. The goal of this show is to explore what I can and share it the best way I can, not to dissuade anyone from the church. In fact, it's to help you understand it and maybe reach out to them yourself if you want to experience something like Sean did with the Daime. Or with the ayahuasca. So be open, but stay skeptical. To learn more about cults, check out the links in the show notes. And of course, stick around for more episodes. The Mist is by me, Nate John. Had some interview help in this episode from Leah Gregory, theme music by Kevin MacLeod, editing help by Leo Castaneda and Emily Burns. And of course, if you like this show, please subscribe and leave me a review. And give as many stars as you can. iTunes says you can only leave 5 stars, but you know, maybe you can leave more. And if you have a story that you would like to tell, I'd love to hear it. Anything mysterious, but mostly about drugs, cults, or culture. The email is mistpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter, @NateJohn. The Mist is brought to you by... This is where the sponsor goes. If you'd like to sponsor stories of the mysterious, send an email to mistpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you to our sponsors.
I'm like sitting there wide-eyed, like, what the heck is going on here? That was not the word I used, but I'm sure we need to keep it clean here.
Oh, no, not at all.
And, no? Okay. So that was...
You stuck around to the end. Nice.